Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. It is actually a very big week in the world of sport because it is a major week in the world of golf. So we've got the USPGA Championship at Southern Hills.
We do.
And then the French Open, as you mentioned, starts on Sunday. So with the French Open, they like to have three Sundays for their tournament. So they start on a Sunday and then they sort of just gradually work their way through the first round. So you got your first Sunday, your middle Sunday, and then your championship Sunday.
Why don't we have that? Why don't we have three Sundays?
We could ask Peter Johnston as a...
I'm going to get three Sundays. I'm going to get that on the calendar. At the end of the interview with Peter Johnston today, we're going to have three Sundays. There you go. I've said it.
Chocolate, strawberry, and caramel.
No. Just vanilla. Just normal, just out of the machine.
Hey?
You don't need to have a third topping, like a Neapolitan.
Well, that's what that. If you go to McDonald's, it's chocolate, strawberry, or
you just get a
hot fudge. Is that hot fudge, caramel, or strawberry?
You can just get a little vanilla one. You can just get the ice cream out of the machine.
You can
just say no topping required, thanks.
Yeah, but
I'm having the middle section of
boring.
The Neapolitan.
Before I go on to what I was going to say, if you had to choose, if you had the Neapolitan 2 litre tub in the freezer,
yeah.
And you could only choose one flavour from that tub, what would it be?
Vanilla.
Yeah, so would I. Yeah. Closely followed by strawberry and chocolate, a distant third.
I'm with you. That's the correct order of play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vanilla, strawberry, chocolate. Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Or, well, one of the great joys of the Neapolitan mix-up is going all the way across the three colours.
That's right.
That's number one choice.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to have all three at the same time. Rather than just the one, but if I'm only left with one, it's that one. It's always, the problem is...
I feel like chocolate dominates if you go with the three.
Do you feel?
Yeah, I do.
I don't know. In our house, as children, when we're able to get the Neapolitan, which is most unusual. In fact, I'd go so far as to say we'd be lucky to get two buckets a year.
Be a school holiday treat.
Yeah, we'd be lucky to get two buckets a year of the Neapolitan. It would be vanilla all the way through. And you get your own, you put Milo on top or chocolate topping or whatever you would. Sometimes the ice magic, as we've discussed in previous episodes of the program. Great program it is. but we would get to the point where it would all be vanilla gone. You'd open the tub 3 days in and the vanilla section would be all gone.
Right.
So you're only stuck with the strawberry and the chocolate.
Right.
Then you've got a dilemma.
Yeah.
What do you do from there? Do you try and mix it up? Or do you empty the strawberry and then leave the chocolate? It's a distressing situation.
Now,
for quite some time.
As I was saying, or about to say, about the golf and then obviously the French Open starting on the Sunday.
Oh, yes, we digressed.
How many Australian men do you think will be in the field, as it stands, direct entry through? How many men do you think have got direct entry to the French Open?
Direct entry?
Yeah. So that, because qualifying's this week, but who's already in?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm not trying to stump you, but
50.
Well, clearly it's not that many.
Well, hang on. What do you mean? So, are you telling me that the French Open doesn't have 50 players already?
No, men, Australian men.
Australian men. I thought you said men.
No. How many Australian men?
Oh God, I missed that bit. That's a pretty important part
of
the
conversation.
No, it was. there would be three.
Six.
Oh, okay. Right.
Dimonar, Duckworth, Milman, Thompson, Kokkinakis.
I would have said...
And Popperin.
I would have said Popperin, Dimonar, and Milman. That would have been my three.
Yeah. And then women, Tomljanovic, Sharma, and Saville. So they're the...
So how many women's that?
Three women, six men, and... and Chris O'Connell.
Doesn't he have
a
show on Gold 104?
Yeah, that's right.
Isn't he the ratings bonanza over on the FM dial?
Well, he has been given a wild card, so maybe he won a $50,000 cash grab or something. Because he's in there as well.
Doesn't he do that great show on the mornings?
So no Barty and no Kyrgios.
No, I don't think Barty's going to come back.
Well, not at this stage.
Not at this stage.
But, so from an Australian perspective, I mean, Dimonar, and we'll talk to Peter Johnston about this. Dimonar has a chance to, I think, maybe get to the second week. In fact, depending on a draw, he should get to the second week. But that is the French Open this year. It is on Gem the whole way through, so one of Channel 9's secondary channels. And then, obviously, if you've got Stan, you can watch a fair bit more of it as well. So at least there will be some free-to-air coverage throughout the course of the 2 weeks, if you like your tennis.
Can you explain to me, while we're there, we didn't mention this yesterday, and I should have, and I apologise for that. Did Sam Stosur make a comeback?
Sam Stosur?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
The answer is yes.
What?
Sam Stosur made a comeback. She played in the Strasbourg International.
Singles or doubles?
Singles. Australian tennis great Sam Stosur has made a shock U-turn, coming out of retirement for competitive singles action to play at the Strasbourg International. But the 38-year-old made it clear after defeat in her unexpected return on Sunday that it was purely a one-off, because she's always loved the French clay court tournament.
She's won that event before.
Well, I'm sure she has. She's very good. She was a very good player. But she got pants 2-6-1 to French woman Amonita. And they're asking her, if Roland Garros... No, she laughed. If Roland Garros calls me and says, you want to play? Sure. No, I don't think it's going to happen. My time for singles is finished. I came across this the other day, and I thought it must have been like an old story that I just come across, that had just popped up in my feed, so to speak. But she made a comeback. Why would she do that? Well, she says she likes the tournament. But
well, I think she's a former winner, so
yeah, I know.
That's my only thought. Surprised?
Are you surprised by that?
No, very surprised.
Yeah,
as a once-off. Very surprised. Anyway,
so how many more one-offs are we going to get? And by the way, she can do whatever the hell she likes, as far as I'm concerned. But it does seem an odd thing to do.
Yeah, we've talked about this before with individual sports, when the commentary is, well, you're taking a spot of a younger player in the field or whatever else. In an individual sport, you can do what you like.
Do whatever the hell you like.
No one is forcing you into retirement. No one is telling you, you know, it's not, you know, you're not a list clogger. If you want to play, good luck to you.
Yep.
If you're good enough to get into the field through qualifying, if you're good enough from a rankings perspective to be in the field, good luck to you. If you want the spot, knock them out. That's the whole thing about tennis and golf and those sorts of sports, which are individual sports.
No, I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. I was just surprised by that. I thought you might have.
No, definitely. I actually did not know.
Well, there you go. There you go.
But I know she's won that event before, and obviously the clay has always been her best surface. Even though she won the US Open, I'd suggest that clay was always her best surface because of her serve predominantly.
Yes. Yes. Did you see it now, this mess? Boys, does this put Mr. Osborne at the top of the table? Two of the easiest watches you will ever see.
Oh, especially the first winner.
Took both wins and the multi, says the press.
Right.
So there would have been 3 into 11 or 4 into 11, so about $40 the multi would have been yesterday for Georgie Osborne, the champ, who is very welcome at the head table.
That first winner, there were no other competitors in the television screen.
No, it was an easy watch, as the press says. Mm. Well done to anyone who took the double there. Well, we did say that if the first one gets up, there'd be a little investment into the second one, because George is quite confident about both.
Exactly right. And I'm not sure what happened to you, but naturally for me, I completely forgot about
absolutely
it.
Absolutely.
And I actually talked about backing the second one with half the winnings or thereabouts if the first one won.
Yeah.
I got a suspicion Trent did bet on both winners.
No, well,
because he was going to do what I was going to do.
I felt sick.
Yeah.
But the spreadsheet was very appreciative of the profit yesterday from George.
I tell you another interesting thing that happened yesterday in the world of sport, and that was that Trent Barrett, the coach, or the former coach of the Canterbury Bulldogs, quit.
He did. 2-8 start to the season.
And all I could think about was, Phil Gould's in controversy again.
Again.
Like, he's gone to another club, and he's rattling the cage, and he's, you know, causing all sorts of problems. Maybe good problems, but...
maybe not.
Well, he did a pretty good job in the end at Penrith in what he was able to do.
Oh, we didn't talk about that yesterday.
Over the belting the storm.
Belting the storm.
Yeah. Mm. But it was just... I just found it fascinating that here is Phil Gould again in, you know, doorstop interviews and causing consternation at a club, you know, rattling the cage to try and get a club back going again. You know, Canterbury historically was such a strong club, particularly through, I remember through the 80s, you know, Canterbury Bankstown was a really strong club. And, you know, Trent Barrett, who was an excellent player, hasn't quite been able to make the transition to coach.
It's not easy. It's not easy catching out there. Only the greats can do it. Now, did you see in the NBA yesterday, did you see that game? I'm not sure if you were watching the Game 7 of the Dallas
I was.
Series.
It was quite remarkable.
It was unbelievable. That's what it was. So Dallas, in the end, went through. They won the series 4-3. They pantsed Phoenix in the end, put the handbrake on, and they're just pulling people out of the crowd to finish the game. People have never played the game before, just paid for tickets, just got a singlet and we're on the field, on the court.
Yeah.
123-30, so I was a smacking by 33 points. But the game was over midway through the second quarter.
Well, I was in here with Gareth for RSN Central, and, you know, we were sort of watching it unfold on the screen, and this is game 7 in Phoenix.
In Phoenix, correct.
And Dallas was 30-odd points in front in the first half. It was just like game over, like so early. And sometimes you might say that in a game 7 if the home team's got the jump and all that sort of thing. But, yeah, you know, they completely zapped the energy out of the crowd, and, game over. And Phoenix were really the team to beat almost the entire competition, and they've been smacked. In the last of 7, but
Luka Doncic had 27 points. Phoenix had 27 points at one stage.
Yeah,
like it was quite remarkable. Now they take on Golden State in their series, which is going to be fantastic. Luka against Clay and Steph doing their thing. So you'll have it's actually a really contrasting series. It'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds. So Dallas and Golden State will play, and it'll be all out attack, just shooting the lights out sort of stuff. And Boston, Miami will be all defense. So it's going to come down to attack versus defense in the NBA Finals. And we know what often happens in those situations, Whitey.
Unfortunately, defense wins.
So we'll see what happens. But the next two series will be fascinating either way. So we'll see what happens, and we'll keep a track of that in the NBA Finals as we head towards the crescendo for another basketball season.
So just before we go to a break, we touched on the fact that the USPGA Championship is this week in at Southern Hills, which is a quite beautiful golf course. And Tiger is going to compete. He said that he's much stronger now than he was at the US Masters as he continues his quest to win another major championship. It'll be interesting to see how much stronger and how much better, because you've got the PGA and then US Open June, and then July, the 150th British Open or Open Championship, whatever way you want to look at it, St Andrews. Obviously, he was very keen to get back for the US Masters for his first event back, but imagine if he was to win that 150th Open Championship, because they're all playing. It's a massive event. We were lucky enough to play golf on Friday with Matt Griffin, who is heading over to participate in the Open Championship in July, because he got that through his third placing in the Victorian Open. With all the former champions coming back and, you know, St Andrews, it's going to be a massive event.
Is the Shark going?
Well, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Well, but it's a good question around not just is the Shark going to be a participant, which is unlikely, but whether with all this live tour thing and big name players, particularly in Europe, putting up the hand to say they want to play, whether they'll be allowed to play in the Open Championship.
We'll see. I want to talk to someone about this whole live thing. We need to get someone on about that, because it's going to change golf, good or bad, for better or for worse. It will change golf, I think.
Well, it's going to be good for some. Like Jed Morgan, who won the PGA Championship in Australia.
Why haven't we spoken to him, Steve? Get him on.
He's going to be a participant, it seems, in the LIV Tour. And if you finish last, you get $150,000. And there's no cut. So young Jed is going to be swimming in cash, even if he doesn't play very well.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's going to change. It's going to change golf and how it all looks going forward. So we should try and get a hold of Jed and then one of the organisers of the LIV Tour, because it's worthwhile having that discussion, seeing what the end game is too. I'd like to know what the end game was with all this. Phil would be mad not to go. He lost $50 million gambling, apparently. 50 mil.
Yeah. So there's a biography coming out. It's a what are they ones when they don't agree to them necessarily, but they do it? Unauthorized. Yeah. And there a lot of rumours about Phil that we've known about for quite some time have emerged in the book, and one of them is the gambling debts and what he had to do to pay them back and all these sorts of things. Or he, in fact, paid them back.
50 mil sounds a lot. Take yourself back. 18 minutes to 7 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. You know who this is, Whitey?
This is the NKOTB.
NKOTB. Commonly referred to as New Kids on the Block.
Who was the most famous New Kids of the Blockman?
Well, I think Donnie Wahlberg was, but only because his brother went out to be the main man.
So there was no real sort of... I don't think there was a Timberlake that had emerged or a Robbie Williams that emerged.
No, you know what? This bloke, well, the person who's having a birthday today, is probably the biggest of them all. Matty Stewart's speaking of biggest of them all, biggest personalities around here. He's joined us. Matthew.
Careful.
Personalities, I said.
Reference. I talk to you. Sounds like something you'd listen to at a yoga class, that's all.
This?
Not that I attend yoga classes, Pilates.
You do Pilates, yeah. So Jordan Knight, he was probably the most famous, outside of Donnie Wahlberg, who... didn't actually do anything. He just had a brother. Jordan was probably it. He was the main man, main vocalist for NKOTB through the time.
I really don't like this song.
No, it's a horrible song. But
I could see you dancing to this, though.
Oh, no, I like
with
absolutely.
With your stussy pants.
I'd absolutely nail this.
Happy pants, sort of.
I'd be getting invoices from nightclubs for scorching their dance floors. That's what I'd be getting.
You need to, because I reckon you've put on a couple of kilos.
You reckon?
Oh!
It might be the puffy jacket. Well, but just, I reckon as I'm...
We're
I reckon
just talking.
We're yin and yanging. I reckon I'm shedding and you're partially gaining.
Well, I'm not actually sure the reality of that or not.
This is a real song.
But I still fit in my clothes. So.
Is this, is this a 16 minutes to 7 awkward moment?
What sort of is when, you know, I came in with big personality and you've just gone the full-on attack, which is a bit aggressive and assaultive. Jordan Knight's having a birthday anyway, you big fat pig. he's a member of NKOTB, or he was back in the old days. That was 1989. There you go. I'll give you a ballpark year. Jordan was a member of the band in 1989. They had that big hit with that song, Step by Step. How old's Jordan Knight today from NKOTB, Matthew?
Oh, I wasn't ready. I was thinking, I don't know.
That's the idea.
40.
You don't even want to play today. You're not focused.
I'm distracted.
I need you to focus. Adam, how old is Jordan Knight?
By that answer. It's got my head spinning.
It's are they more recent than I'm giving them credit for?
You weren't listening to what Daniel said, perhaps.
You weren't listening. You're too rattled by your aggressive confrontation.
54.
Oh. Now, see, this is what we need. This is man, an educated man who understands the concept of what we're doing. Like, we include you in this stuff to try and improve your profile.
I don't know why you do.
Just try and improve your profile. Get you, out there to some listeners.
Yep.
We're trying to help. And this is what you do. You come in, you say 40. Couldn't be any further. 12 away you are. He's 52. You're in the window, Whitey, but he's 52 today.
Saved by Whitey, though, because we're a team when it comes to this, so we're generally correct.
You know what we need? We need to send Matt down to Dean Lester School for a week just to get into the ballpark of how to play this game.
Yeah, Dean's pop culture is Dean's other thing, and lavish stage musicals and pop culture and horse racing. So he's that's why he was the Trivia Night King.
He's a god around here for the birthday bulletin. Other birthdays today, Enya.
Talk about yoga music.
I'll chime in with Enya.
She's 61 today. No, you can't play.
Me down when I was about to say just over 60.
Damn it. Tony Roach is having a birthday today too. Aussie tennis champ. Great coach. He's 77 today. Sugar Ray Leonard's having a birthday today. He's 66. Sean Hart, Norm Smith medalist, is 51
What number
today.
Did he wear?
He wore the number which got him a Norm Smith medal. Was it? No, I don't know. 30-something?
Yeah.
32.
Very good.
Yes. That's how you play the game, man. Who else have we got? Alan Richardson. Richo, former St Kilda coach, these days dominating
Melbourne. What number did he wear Collingwood?
13. Very 57 good. Is Richo's age today. Andrea Corr from the Corrs. Now, I could have easily just
she
gone
was
down the Corr.
The one.
I could have easily just gone down there because we know you know.
Seems to be about 28 Corrs. Always one of them seems to be.
Andrea was always just a little step forward from the rest.
Because she was the lead singer.
The sisters were very jealous of Andrea.
Well, they would have been. She's 48 today,
oh.
Is our girl Andrea, my favourite one. Passenger had a hit with Let Her Go in a couple of years ago, 10 years ago, 8 years ago. Well, he's 38 today. And on this day, the Melbourne Football Club, the oldest club in the country, was incorporated at the Bryant's Parade Hotel in East Melbourne, 1859. That's a long time ago, isn't it? Long time. Matthew, good morning.
Morning. Sugar Ray Leonard, just on that, I don't follow boxing at all, don't even like it. But I watch more Sugar Ray Leonard docos than any other doco on YouTube because there's just something about Sugar Ray Leonard, the little Ali type thing. You've been a Sugar Ray man?
Have you watched Sugar Raymond
with Tommy Hitman Hearns and all these other things?
I'm a Sugar Ray man.
Unreal.
Oh, yeah. Because he's a great specimen.
And a physical, gentle figure, like when you hear him talk, like he could be like a pastor or something, pastor
or a linguine,
exactly,
or a rice dish.
You said something this morning that made me laugh on the way in because you know those modern day terms that you hear that you'd have to explain to someone not of the modern age.
Yes.
When you said something popped up on my feed.
Yes.
I had visions of people from 100 years ago. Well, what was it? Like a worm or something? And it reminded me of Ron Reed and me.
Ronnie Reed.
Ron and I used to go on these lunches late in our time at the Herald Sun before the thing came down. We went to a restaurant in Bay Street, Port Melbourne called Dalmatia or Dalmatian. And we got our meal. He was a crafty old bugger, Ron, right? So we got our meal. And they must have pulled the olives out on the little olive bowl from a gigantic bowl of olives at the back, and there was a worm on the olives, which can happen. This is no knock on the restaurant. This can happen. But I said, Ron, there's a little critter on the olives. He said, I'll take care of this. Call the manager. So 10 minutes later, we got our meal for free. We had this idea, but we never executed it from that moment of having a little worm as an accompanying friend and just toss it on whatever. So his eyes lit up. I was like, for crying out loud, do we eat the olives? And he's like, opportunity.
You journos. You newspaper journos.
He was tight too, Ron.
Arsenal 2-0, by the way. Sorry, Newcastle 2-0 over Arsenal. That's big news for Tottenham fans. That's over, that game. No points for Newcastle. Sorry, Arsenal. What have you got for us, Matty?
We had an interesting chat to, there's a super young jockey who's just going places. Her name's Alana Kelly.
She's
flying. And she's just so focused and stoic. And we had a chat to Dwayne Dunn yesterday about this transition that a lot of young jockeys do from claiming 3 to 1.5 to 1, and then they lose their claim and they get lost in the wilderness. And just curious about how this does happen around the sporting world. But this is what Dwayne Dunn said when I said, what would you advise Alana about this difficult next stage of her career? Not a word of caution, but if there's anything you could say, and you probably could say it to her directly in a minute, to Alana Kelly about this next phase of her career, what are the things she has to be mindful of? What are the potential pitfalls?
I think it's the complacency of sitting on your hands and think you're good instead of looking back at how you got there and how hard you worked to get there. Now that you are there, you have to work twice as hard as what you did the day before. And
I don't think Alana's any problem for that because she's just she understands it. She understands that there is a crossroad that a lot of, like Bo Mertens, he's back now, but he was fighting out premierships with Craig Williams as a claiming apprentice, and then he got lost for 2 years because that step was too hard. And
so what's the step? What makes it harder?
From junior to senior, it's when they're a claiming apprentice. Everyone wants them because they can claim.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then as soon as the claim goes, they're on their own 2 feet. They haven't got the extra advantage of taking weight off. And it's just that extra maturity of, you know, you're a kid and you're sailing along and everyone wants to use you, then all of a sudden it gets harder. Can you knuckle down and get through that next period, or do you sort of get lost in the wilderness, as Dwayne Dunn said? But it's so common, isn't it, Whitey?
No, absolutely it is.
The Jack Watts scenario, a little bit, superstar young footballer, can you actually knuckle down and make it? And all those golfers, there's a million golfers out there who hit the ball exactly the same.
Yeah, that's right.
Junior golfers, but what is the quality? And in footballers as well, you know, like there's a million superstars, but that transition, how many actually get through that gate and make it? And what is the quality that it's just, what is it with the footballers that what takes the superstar junior to the superstar senior if all the physical attributes are there? It's obviously above the neck, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, some are just animals. Some are just different beings. They're wired differently. That's the key, I reckon. You're just wired different. You can be as talented as you like and you can work as hard as you like, but in the end, you've got to want to kill them. You've got to want to eat everyone and be the best. And it's a mindset. It's a
does
totally
it go
different.
Against most human that. Natures? Like most human nature, is it is it a rare trait?
Yeah, I think it is overall. Yeah, I think you're different gravy, and that's why the greats are the greats. Physical talents and capacity aside, I think the difference between a great player, an all-time great and a really good player, is the way they think about it, and they're wiring mentally.
Mm. And the golfers fascinate me, because we've all played with a guy who's the club champion at the age of 17, and you think, no one can play better than this kid. There's no such thing as anyone, but there's 50 million of those on a scrap heap, isn't there, Wade?
Well, I think from a golf perspective, it's more mental than any other sport.
It's not about the swing necessarily.
No, it's not. It is about the swing, but it's about the ability to execute under pressure. And like we were talking about this earlier, Half and I played golf with Matt Griffin on Friday, and Matt's a good friend of the program. And, you know, I can't, at times I can't understand why he doesn't go better than he does. Now, he's still a really good player, and he's a very successful player in Japan, but you watch him play and it's a bit of a knock around, so the pressure's not there. And he was pretty disappointed with the way he played the other day, and he shot 71. Now, if he shot 71 in the first round of the Australian Open, he'd be pretty happy with that. But it's that whole thing about, okay, when you need to make an 8-foot putt to make the cut, or when you need to make a 6-foot birdie putt to rocket up the leaderboard, have you got the mental strength to do it? And I think, you know, that's potentially different to a team sport, because it's all on you. Whereas
you can hide a bit in a team sport, a little bit.
Not too sure. Not for long.
Not for long.
Not for long.
Yeah.
But you can be your errors or your inadequacies or your weaknesses can be masked by your teammates a bit.
Yeah, but if that continues, you're not there for long.
You're cogging the wheel too, aren't you?
You'd be a list clogger before you know it.
But as a jockey, it's a bit like a golfer, is that you've got no one to blame except yourself. Like, it's on you. That if you take the wrong run or you go too hard too early, all those sorts of things, there's nowhere to hide as a jockey. So strength is as much about it, I would imagine, as physical strength.
Now, we're going to get to a break very shortly, Matthew. Anything else for us?
Yep. Brian Kruger is joining Michael Falgate for an extended chat this morning, I think from 8:30 or from 9. No, from 9. And this is all this stuff going on at the moment regarding things that may or may not be interlinked. You know, the Caulfield 2 tracks, the holding pattern with Sandown, this Project X in the north, the fact that overwhelmingly the participants and the stakeholders have a real issue with this idea of a second track at Caulfield, but will they plough on anyway? So it's going to be a really interesting chat. Probably listeners might want to chuck in a few comments on that thing.
The SMS machine.
The SMS machine. Yep.
Send it through. That's going to be interesting a little bit later on this morning. Always a pleasure to see you, Matthew.
Thanks,
you
boys.
Look felt and healthy, as opposed to the aggression you came in with.
Thanks, lads.
This is a real shot across the bow for you, wasn't it?
This is Andrew.
Maybe you need to
this
be
is Andrew.
Andrew. And the other calls.
All the calls. Andrew's our favourite, though. Happy birthday, Andrea.
Just repeating that news on that Premier League game, Arsenal have gone down to Newcastle 2-0. So that means now Tottenham, to get fourth, they only need to draw against Norwich. So a draw or a win, obviously, will be enough for fourth spot because of goal difference.
Are you getting ahead of yourself? Why aren't you taking one game at a time?
Because there's only one game left.
Well, you're not taking one game at a time. I'm concerned
Nathan
about
Nathan Hobson
you.
Was the trainer of Orienzel.
Oh, Hobbo, yeah, man. We love Hobbo. Mm. Always gets winners for us. We need to talk to him again soon. Well, as we go through winter, we get up to Swan Hill, up to the regions. Mm. We get Hobbo back on, get some winners.
Swan Hill Cup's not far away.
Are we going up?
Gareth is. We're not going. I wanted to go up because I wanted to play golf at Murray Downs.
Of course you did. Steve-O wouldn't want us to do that, though, because he wants us in the studio so he can...
No, I'm a countryman. We need to do more trips. country guy. We could be like the you could be the Leyland brothers.
No, we don't need to be doing that unless you give me a rangy like the Leyland brothers used to have.
Yeah,
but not that one. I like half, the modern
more
version.
An Albie Mangles type.
He is. Him and Hall's gap there, I can imagine. He went camping and they stayed in a caravan park.
with
toilets. You don't go camping unless you go and do your business in a pit.
No, that's
100% agree.
Yeah. No, that is absolute garbage.
There's no toilets if you're camping.
Absolute
camping.
Garbage. Never, you start. You're not involved in this conversation, White.
Next thing you'll tell me there was a TV.
You're not involved in this conversation, White, because you wouldn't get out of a 5-star. Or a bricks and mortar type set.
Oh, no,
no.
There has to be wild animals.
Yeah, and, wild animals. And kangaroos came in and started eating our hot cross buns.
Yeah, but you need to feel under threat.
At night time, we're under threat. Came into the bloody tent, the annex.
Okay. Yeah.
Stupid bloody thing.
Did you have a TV?
In the tent?
In the cabin.
There's a tent.
In a caravan.
There's no cabin. Tent.
But it's a plot in a caravan park.
Oh, my God.
Was there an ablution block?
I'm going to ablution you.
Was there an ablution block?
You're ablutioning me.
Well, that's a yes.
Yeah, but honoured to be here on Enya's birthday, actually, because it reminded me of a story. We have a guy who played cricket with, Tim Stannard. Every week he turns up with his headphones on.
Just like my Erskine Fall story?
Yeah. No, not quite.
I fall a bit flat.
He turns up with his headphones.
No. Well, that's only because you couldn't tell the full story.
Well, picnics at the falls. Yeah, Erskine River, beautiful.
So he turns up, walks across the ground every week with the headphones on. You think he's got Def Leppard, Rocket, or Eye of the Tiger on. So one week I said, what do you listen to, mate? Enya.
Real peaceful sort of zen
week,
sort
week
of
two? I said, what you listen to, Timmy?
Is that what you said, what you're listening to?
Yeah, you what you're listening to,
some
Timmy.
Words.
Yeah, well, this is the way we talk down at the
what you put, you go to character there.
Yeah. Word efficiencies.
Hey, Timmy, what you listen to, mate?
Timmy, what song on?
Week two. Titanic theme, Celine Dion.
Yeah, he's really going zen, yeah, real passion.
It was like Mitchell Johnson when he got to the top of his mark, he'd sing the Frozen song. Let it go. To try and relax.
It might be a topic.
Is that right?
Yeah, at one stage, the great pump-up song, Eye of the Tiger, still number one. Every sort of country footy club used to play it.
A bit of Pat Benatar.
Yeah.
On the Ghetto Blaster.
Or Fighter.
Playing to Win.
John Farnham is still LRB. Playing to Win. Yeah, LRB.
Yeah, but anyway, we
digress.
Melbourne are playing to win. They haven't lost yet this
year. You're getting some feedback off the SMS. I won't read it.
Right.
You can read it by yourself later on.
Melbourne are playing to win, obviously. So dangerous tackle half. We spoke about this yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Kyle Chandler. Now, I thought he was in trouble. It was a bit of a face plant. Two matches. Does this mean that the tackle is under threat? Because there wasn't a lot of malice in it. It just sort of got pushed forward.
No, we discussed this just today, and I thought he was a chance to get off. But when you go through the way it's seen at the moment, with any level of concussion and due to the force of someone else, I was probably silly in the way I assessed that.
Mm.
So he cops his 2 weeks. They're not even going to challenge it. Cade Chandler and Luke Foley's a bit crook still over there in West Coast Eagles, over in the West. So
yep.
I think, it's... Oh, I still don't think he did too much wrong, I must admit. He let him go before he hit the deck anyway. But if it's your fault and there's probably another way, then the MRI is just going to say have a spell.
So are you comfortable that he gets 2 weeks but Liam Ryan gets one?
Not overly.
Because this is action versus outcome. And So I understand why Chandler got 2 weeks, but it's the whole thing around action versus outcome, isn't it?
But that's the system. So, I mean,
I know. I'm not. Yeah, that's right.
But half one was
the system
a football
need
act.
To change.
Yeah, one's a football act, the tackle.
Well, the bump's a football act too. It was in the course of play. It wasn't as if it was off the ball.
It was intentionally ran past the ball and got him high.
No, I'm okay with the action. And this is like if we were grading the old Jimmy Vartel conversation we have: if football acts and non-football acts, you get a week if it's a non-football act before you even start. I wouldn't be giving him a week before we start. I think it's a football act, the Liam Ryan situation.
What about Essendon? We need to move on to this. I mean, last night it was extraordinary. On the couch, used to be compelling viewing, maybe not so much anymore, because they always had a great guest, didn't they, Whitey? There'd be someone under the pump on the couch. Goes back to the Mike Sheen. Talking footy days, Robert Wall's days. Well, they were really back in business last night. Dyson Heppel fronted up just to defend on the Dylan Shield situation. Just the way Essendon are going. Take a listen to a very passionate skipper of the Bombers, Dyson Heppel.
I had no idea it was happening in the moment. I hadn't even seen the vision. That was the first time. So if you're aware of it in the moment, I have no doubt teammates will go straight over and help and support.
Have you spoken about it as a group? Have you addressed that moment as a group?
No, mate, no. I hadn't seen that vision at all, no. Lordy's got every right to say that, no doubt. Everyone has their own opinion, that's fine. But what does he want Dylan to plough through someone, give away a free kick, give away a 50-metre penalty and another goal? You know, this day and age, free kicks are given away so quickly. And I think the hardness and the firmness and what you're talking about in being a nice football team, it's not about giving away free kicks or showing full-blown aggression, or it's when the ball's there to be won. That's what we want to stand for. We need to just find that vibrant f***ing energy and work towards it. You know, I do. I f***ing feel the emotion, mate, and it's, you know, I want to absolutely have full belief.
Dropping a few bombs there, the skipper?
Yeah, we had to pick that out. I got on the editing machine there and went beep.
How did you find the button?
Step forward?
No, that was...
You were producing sort of...
I found a pre-beep version. Extraordinary, though. Number one, Heppel, very passionate. But seriously, you do not have to drop the F-bomb to prove that you're passionate. That's stupidity on national TV to start with.
I'm not sure he went in with the plan of doing
that. But
he
did that. It twice.
Yeah, but that's probably how he speaks a bit too. And you need to be able to be refined that when you're on national television.
I think you can refine that.
But... I'm not too stressed about that. If that's his biggest issue last night, he's going okay.
But if you need to drop the F-bomb just to put some extra icing on what you're saying, that's a concern. I know he was passionate.
I actually don't think he meant to.
But he did it twice, Whitey.
I think he did more than twice. But I think he... Look, I've never seen Dyson Heppel as passionate and emotional as he was last night. And I think it shows how much he's hurting and how much he's caring. So I think that's the starting point with that interview. I think there were some interesting things he said.
Well, there's some interesting things
he didn't say. But he fronted up. I applaud Essendon for putting the captain up and to answer some very difficult and uncomfortable questions.
We surprised half that he hadn't seen the vision of Dylan Shealy. So I haven't seen it yet. It was 36 hours on. Much talked about. His captain, and perhaps would he have gone back and had a look at it?
I'm surprised that he hadn't been made aware of it. How about that? It's not necessarily had he seen it, but had he been made aware of it. Because if you don't see it in the moment, and you're not watching replays of the whole game, I wouldn't imagine too many Bombers players these days. So they watch their edits in their little patches and go through that. But I'm surprised, being the captain who's been put in front of a television camera, that he hadn't been made aware of it, given a chance to see it.
And also, obviously, Lloydie's take is you plough through... Parker, you give away a free for the greater good. So,
well, Lloydie actually clarified that last night. I saw a bit of this on Classified when he was talking about it. They threw it at him. And he said, not necessarily go out there and whack blokes, but just be really strong in that next contest and make your physicality known. So it was what he was saying.
But sometimes, is it worth giving away a free? You're going to lose the game anyway, to change things up just for the greater good and the long term. That can be a turning point. It could be a line in the sand moment, half.
Yeah, but it might cost you the game too. Who knows? Like, if I'm the coach, like if I've got my coaching hat on, and I've seen someone who's perhaps had a moment that they won't be overly wrapped about, and I'm certainly not wrapped about, then they go and back it up with another mistake by being a goose and trying to show us how tough they are. I'm annoyed about that. I'm really annoyed about that. They're not staying on the ground for very long. We're going to have a conversation about your life, because that annoys me. Because it actually becomes about you more than us. If you put yourself in front of the team, then that's a problem.
You expect a response, Whitey, from Essendon?
I don't know what to expect from Essendon, to be honest. I was expecting them to be a lot better against Sydney. And I think that's the problem with Essendon. I don't know what to expect. I don't think the fans know what to expect. And that's that whole thing around... I guess, trusting the team. And like, it's just got to the point with Essendon now where words are kind of a bit cheap. It's actually about actions. So I know, but I think it's really good that Dyson fronted up there. And, I think that's a great thing. But this is the whole problem with a team that's half lacking confidence. And you've been through this as coach of Carlton, is that you can say all you like, but if your players can't then back it up with actions, you can look silly as a coach.
The test of your culture will be how quickly it disintegrates or how quickly you can get it back together.
Exactly right. And Dyson did talk about that yesterday. Exactly right. It's about, he's confident that the playing group hasn't splintered or fractured. That they are clearly aware that they're not playing very well, but he's confident that there hasn't been this, you know, talking corridors and all these sorts of things, that they're all in it together. But whether the team likes it or not, or the club likes it or not, they're going to be now judged on their actions on Saturday night and beyond. And it's about stripping it back. It's about looking for little wins and that they are playing together.
Well, there was a suggestion that the game plan is going to be a strip back.
There was some
conversations about that within the walls there, the corridors of power there at Tullamarine, that they're getting a little bit funky and fancy and they've got to strip it right back and just keep it pretty simple.
Well, there will be some changes. I think there is some more news around as well. James,
well, just, well, I just want to say...
I want to move on.
I'm not going to let you, because I just want to say one more thing.
You can't do that,
mate. Oh, one more thing on Essendon.
He doesn't want to let you move on.
We've got to remember with Essendon, last year they made the finals, they beat one top eight team for the entire year. We just got to remember that they made the finals, but they weren't a great team last year.
Look, I thought Essendon, even in that final play, the Dogs run to the pump at halftime down in Tassie. If they'd just taken their chances, they would have been two or three goals up. There were a few iffy decisions. They were quite competitive in that final, Whitey.
Absolutely they were.
So they've fallen a long way since
If it didn't
that.
Rain, who knows what it would was, happen.
That's right. They were dominating inside 50s.
But they only did beat one top eight team last year. Mm. So it's not like they are a team that was an excellent team last season, and they're well off where they were last year.
For a bloke who wanted to move on, you engaged in that conversation really quickly, Stevo.
Well, I had to.
You took it further,
because he took the opportunity to mention the Bulldogs.
I didn't want to upset Whitey.
Any chance?
Good news at Hawthorn, James Sicily.
Great news.
5-year deal, released exclusively to the Herald Sun, which is always a bugbear for journos when it gets dropped in the Herald Sun. But they got the back page, which is a great result. He looks like certainly the next captain. You'd think half of Hawthorn, you being a Hawks great, you'd support that.
Very keen to see James develop.
Yep. Gunston, I think he's avoided the Liz Frank.
But so your doctor at the pub wasn't right?
No, but it's
your
still a bad
Your pub doctor
one.
Was too many beers at the pub for your medico.
It's a medial ligament to the ankle, which is a strange
Nothing
one.
Nothing like Liz.
Well, it can be Arnie Liz, but it was close to Arnie Liz. But it was,
Nick Cox has got the Liz Frank.
Yes, that's right. So medial ligament to the ankle, which is rare. Now, it's a long term, a mid to long term, I think. So different to the lateral. So that'll be several weeks, I think, for Gunston. Of course, Zach Williams, 10 to 12. It wasn't the Achilles.
No.
It was a Johnny Patton type calf injury, and even worse than that. So basically a high-end calf strain. So that's 10 to 12 weeks.
Calf strain, 10 to 12
weeks. Yeah, it must be a bad one. Now, I also want to just quickly talk about Damien Hardwick. He's, of course, on the medicinal marijuana. Now, I mentioned Cheech and Chong last week, and it seems that Dimmer's a bit of a fan of Cheech and Chong as well.
I've copped a fair bit of flack, I reckon, for the medical marijuana. The players reckon they're doing cones in the box upstairs half the time. But anyway, it's one of the stigmas, I think, that's a little bit around it. It's a medicinal...
It does have a serious side to it, though.
It does, absolutely. It's been incredibly beneficial for me and taken away a lot of my... inflammation and pain, which is
going to help so many people. Seriously, because they read that if you have it, it's going to encourage other people to have
it. Well, there's certainly a stigma attached, and I was one of those. You know, I remember watching the Cheech and Chong movies when I was a kid. And
you just wanted to mention Cheech and Chong because you referenced it last week.
No, it was interesting. If half the players thought he's doing cones. But
is he an ice cream fan? Is that what that means? He likes
ice cream. Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure what a cone is. Whitey's...
you have ice cream in it.
Choc Top for Whitey.
Well, our Neapolitan conversation this morning ties in beautifully.
At our house, the chocolate always went first, the strawberry second, and vanilla last. Because if you like vanilla, why don't you just buy a tub of vanilla? Why are you even going to Neapolitan?
Well, because it's a bit of a change-up, because the three together are actually a win.
But you're saying the vanilla's that far ahead. I see it as just the consolation prizes and token, that you've got the two other colours in the tub.
Well, I think that's actually a fair call.
What do you mean?
If you want the vanilla, you may as well.
No, your question was, if you could choose one of the flavours of the Neapolitan. That's a very different conversation.
No, it is, but it's a fair call. But I agree.
For us, the special treat was when Mum would go the Blue Ribbon. It's like extra creamy.
Have you seen how that's made? Oh, that's the Viennetta, isn't it? The Viennetta.
Yeah, the Viennetta. That's intoxicating.
Unbelievable.
Talking to the Tigers, I'm about to ring
Barmy. Mesmerising.
And I think we should ask Barmy if he's on the medicinal marijuana as well.
Surprised you didn't mention Toby Tax today.
Toby Tax, yeah, unlucky. Well, we talked about Lynch. That probably should have copped a week, the elbow. And you look at and you mentioned this, we looked at the replay and it's identical to what Toby did last year and got a week. For danger.
Toby Tex. It's real.
Mm.
It is real. Very surprised by that. Very surprised. I reckon Barmy would be pretty happy about it, though. Very happy that Tom is not spending any time on the sidelines. He'll be back out there for Dreamtime at the G. It is a big night, Saturday night, at the mighty MCG. The Tigers and the Bombers going head-to-head. And I'm getting SMSs from Tiger supporters. Scotty and Tigerland's on it on the machine. But Jared is also sending messages through saying, can we please stop putting ammunition in the Bombers' gun?
There's a bit of panic.
There is panic. Wonder if Barmy's panicking. We'll find out after this.
Half and Whitey. This is RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
26 past 7 on a Tuesday morning. Looks like a decent morning. Is there any balloon activity? Any flaggage?
I haven't seen any balloon activity.
You see the wind? Any wind on the flag?
It's a flutter. The weather today is okay, not great. There's a possible shower or two, but there's a couple of heavy falls in the last 24 hours.
There was.
About 3.6 mils in the city gauge yesterday.
3.6 mils in the city gauge. Neil Baum, I wonder if he's a weatherman. I wonder if he keeps track of the weather like you do. He's the legend, of course, in the Richmond Football Club. He joins us on the line. Baumy, good morning.
It has a bit more of an impact on me at the minute because I'm not far from Punt Road, so I've been riding my bike a bit to work and back, and it does make things more difficult if it does rain. So we've been blessed, really. I've been pretty lucky, but I've got wet a couple of times.
So
yes, I do take notice.
So before you leave, are you looking at the radar saying, oh, am I going to need the spray jacket, or am I just going to just roll with the T-shirt today?
Radar probably doesn't get a look. I'm going to have a look at the sky.
How long, what is the travel time? Is it like a 10-minute little spin?
Yeah, maximum. It's actually quicker to ride than it is to drive from my place to Hunt Road because of the traffic and the cars and that. So it's not very far.
Is there an executive bike sort of spot to park?
I'll actually take it inside and put it out the front of my office, so I'll probably do the wrong thing. That's fairly executive, though, isn't it?
Well, that's very executive. I like that. I like that a lot. Now, how confident are you going to get Marlon Pickett off at the tribunal tonight, Barmy?
Oh, look, if you look back at the past, it's ridiculous that he's even up, in a sense, but we understand why. So it is a bit of a challenge because we do know what the principles behind it are. But you think that I always look at it from the point of view of intent. There's certainly no intent in what he did. He was doing what we would expect him to do, which is protect his teammate with the ball, and he wasn't trying to hurt the bloke. It was just a bit of bad luck. So I'm hoping that that's the way that I can see it. But it's worth challenging it, but, you know, whatever happens will happen. But it'd be awful if he missed, particularly given the fact that it's dream time and he and Jess have designed the jumper and all those sorts of other beautiful things about it. So it would be disappointing. But we kind of get it, but which is why, you know, we're challenging it to give him a chance.
Do you think that players in finding themselves in those situations these days, that they are a bit more wary of what they should be doing? Or is it just, it's such an instinctive part of the game, and it has been for so long, that they just do it. And if they happen to get it slightly wrong or the wrong outcome happens, they just have to wear it.
I think that's the case. I saw one of the AFL executives last night on TV saying how simple it is. Well, I don't think it's that simple. I reckon if you said to some of the old coaches, you know, Barras and Tommy and all those guys, that there's a rule now that says you can tackle someone too hard, they look at like you're from Mars. But it's not possible to tackle someone too hard. All you do is tackle them. You tackle them as hard as you can because that's what the game is. Now, I think we sometimes forget how challenging the game is and how much we need to impose on our opponents, particularly even in a, you know, certainly in a fair way. But I understand what they're doing because there is all this about concussion and heads and all that sort of stuff. But most of it is just the risks that you take. And I reckon some of the old coaches would think they'd all gone mad. But so it is a challenge. And, you know, some of that stuff is a bit over the top. And I think it's really quite unfair on the players to make them have to even consider it because we just want them to play as well and as hard as they can. And if there's any nasty intent, well, fair enough. Figure it out. But when there's not, I reckon you almost got to forgive them personally. But that's, people have seen me play. They think I'm anyway, so...
Last time we spoke to you, Barmy, it was a very inconsistent footy team. You were sort of really good one week and not so good the next. You've now won three in a row, and we're starting to see some very good football. Has anything changed, or What do you put the consistency down to, and bet it just pure better footy?
Oh, I think we just know what we want to do, and we're training it pretty hard, and specifically training things. I mean, last week's game was some of our tackling, team tackling, and all that sort of stuff was quite outstanding, and they're the sorts of things we've been working on more from just to make sure we do it instinctively. And we've just known every time, even, you know, Damon's, even when he's spoken to the players, he said, look, we didn't get a good outcome today, but some of the things we did were very good. So let's keep working on them and just improve the other stuff. So we've been doing it, fairly consistently and bit by bit, and we'll get better. And I'm pretty optimistic about what we're going to be able to do for the year. We're getting, our best is very good. But even last week's game, we did a lot of things that we can improve enormously on that we didn't do all that well, but enough good things as well. But to be fair, Essendon are a bit like that as well. They're a little bit up and down also. But that just reflects how difficult it is for the game to play nowadays. There are so many things to get right. It's much more complex than it ever was. Our game, we need to play a good, strong, hard defensive game for us to get offensive opportunity. So one leads... It's almost the opposite, leading to each other. If you get them right, well, all of a sudden you look like your offense, it works good, but it's all on the back of how well we've defended and how challenging we've been to the other team. So it is a bit more complex than it looks, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, but I think you make perfect sense, and I think that's been one of the features of Richmond in the last 3 weeks. You've got back to that tiger toughness, that ruthlessness in the contest, and everything else is sort of coming from there. The two players I want to ask you about, one is Tom Lynch, and... I guess you're playing better, so Tom Lynch as a forward's the beneficiary of that. But he seems to be almost at his absolute best at the moment.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's confidence in yourself as well, and he's getting a bit more confidence in himself. And we know that he is a very talented player. So we're just got to make sure he gets things right. We give him the opportunities that he deserves when he leads up and he's on. Let's kick it to him when he's one on one. Let's kick it to him in the air. Let's work that out and give him every chance. And it's not just about him, obviously. There's other players around him. But he's a terrific player. We love what he does, and we've just got to give him the opportunity to play well. But sometimes he has been disappointing at times, but it's more lacking confidence in himself and us probably kicking it to the right spots for him at times.
Yeah, and someone that I don't think lacks confidence is Shai Bolton. I kind of feel like he goes under the radar still a little bit. I think he's one of the best players in the competition.
His best is, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, so you've been...
His only challenge is to play all day.
Yes.
And he does, but, he gets better and better at that. And again, I think we underestimate how hard it is to run all day to play footy, and that's what you've got to get in. When he does, he is an outstanding player, isn't he?
Yeah, so, I mean, you've been footy such a long time. Is he right up there with... Not so much the tricks, but he's top end. How good is it?
Oh, well, you just look at when he gets that opportunity of one-on-one and the ball's there, when he's on, he'll get it every time because he's so quick, he's so clean, he's got such lovely balance and movement. Yes, he is. He's an outstanding player, absolutely. I mean, I've even been moved to say if he played like that all day, he wins the Brownlow. So... He is certainly a very talented kid. We've just got to encourage him to keep at it and keep at it.
He's a bit special. I agree with that. He is something to watch, is Shai Bolton. When you get to your mid-season review, Barmy, you get a chance to breathe for half an hour or so with the bye week and you reflect on the season to date. Do you think that you look back and think that the start to the year provided unbelievable opportunity for some players and might actually be the turning point, that the magnets have flipped a bit? We've got Jaden Short going on the ball, got Morris Rioli Jr. coming into the forward line, Dan's doing a great job at half back, that through a little bit of necessity, we've found some unbelievable outcomes?
Yeah, well, I think that's where the game is. You can't be the same as last year. You've got to improve. And sometimes it is through need like that. And then, and Asoldo, who was out with a knee, comes back into the team, and every week you're saying, are we playing two ruckmen, or do we get a backup bloke, or what are we, there's all of those challenges. But I think we'll just get better as the year goes on. But, I mean, I'm, a fairly optimistic bloke, but I think we will. And we've still got the opportunity. There's still a handful of players that we haven't played, if not at all, certainly not much, who may have the chance to make a difference anyway, some of the younger kids. So, well, I don't think it's... I'm not sure what's going to finish up, but I know that I'm certain we're on the right path, and some of it is doing things like playing short in the middle rather than at half back. I mean, it's made a difference to what we do. It has given us an opportunity to improve.
Which, yeah,
they're the things at the start of the year saying, well, you know, we're going to have to replace some of these older blokes at some stage. What are we going to do? You know, Koch, for example. I mean, he's not going to play forever, but he's playing okay. But with the fact that Short can come into the middle and runs all day, well, that gives us an opportunity. And there's a handful of other kids we haven't even played much who can do that sort of stuff as well. But I'm not quite sure when they're going to get their opportunity. But I think we're in a reasonably good place from that point of view.
And there's a conversation at the moment that the coach has got his mojo back. He's got his groove back. He's on the cones and the box and he's medicinal marijuana, as he was telling us last night on 360. But he's found his groove back. Is that what you've seen, or did he ever lose it, or has there been a real energisation of Damien Hardwick?
Oh, I didn't feel that he'd lost it at all, no. But there is. You do. I mean, you do have to re-energise. There's no doubt about that. And some of his work in front of the players has been a bit different and really quite exciting. He's very engaged. I think the players are enjoying it. So, but you know, Cage's job is difficult. In some ways, we look at the coach and wait for him to encourage us to have a go. Well, you shouldn't have to wait for that.
Yeah.
But if he does it well, you're going to be better off. But no, I think our players understand where they fit. I think the club's in a very good place from the point of view of empowerment and encouraging people to take responsibility for their jobs, etc., whether you're a player or a coach or a staff member. So I think we're in a pretty good place from that point of view, which makes it easier for the coach to do his job, I think.
Now, it is a big game on Saturday night. The coach will be in full swing on Saturday night, no doubt, for Dreamtime MCG 7:30 against the Bombers. But, Barmy, how do we get to a point where both of the jumpers that the teams will be wearing are basically the same? What's happened, Neil?
Fortunately, it's not my responsibility, so they can't blame me.
There's a lot of people watching, and we're going to be annoyed, Neil, I think. We're going to be annoyed.
Well, that in itself will make it... the best players will play better because they're the ones who see the right stuff. Hopefully we won't be handballing to them and maybe they'll be handballing to us.
Well, so,
it is a bit of a challenge, but they're the things that happen to, you know, when you do things like encourage people like Marlon and his wife to design the jumper for us because Dreamtime means a lot to them and to all of us, and that you're going to make these mistakes is not the term, but I understand why it might be a little bit difficult, but hopefully it won't be the most important part of the night.
No, hopefully it won't. Hopefully it won't. Yeah. The quality football will be the most important.
Yeah.
Is what we're after.
It'll be the stand rule and the 50-metre penalties for dissent will be the hot topic.
Can you believe all of that rubbish? why are we doing that? I mean, we're making it about the umpires. It's not. It's about the players. I don't understand who sat somewhere and said, oh, we need to give 50 metres against a player who moves, you know, 1 centimetre on the mark. I just don't understand why we're doing it. It's so much effort put into doing something that doesn't matter, in my view. Now, someone else might think it matters. Maybe they think we need to have 50 metres. I don't know. I don't think we do. I think the players play it. I think we should, when they do something well, we should reward them. We shouldn't reward someone with a 50-metre penalty and a free goal for someone who kind of half moves when he's standing the mark. I mean, no, I don't get it. But anyway, that's personal. That's not a club opinion. That is my own opinion.
I think it's shared by many.
Shared by many.
Good.
Many, absolutely many. And, well, just on that, and I'm absolutely not trying to get you in trouble here, but should we be able to let players have be able to express themselves respectfully from a moment of frustration? Because we're getting 50-metre penalties now for dissent.
I think I saw something when I was watching on the TV the other night. There was a push in the back, which is clearly a push in the back, and the umpire got it wrong. You know, he just clearly got it wrong, which sometimes happens.
Yep.
And the poor bugger who had it against him has put the arms out and gone, what? And he's gone, that's 50 metres. And I'm looking at him going, this is just madness. Absolute madness. He got it completely wrong. Everyone in the world knew he got it wrong. And the poor kid who said, didn't you get that wrong? He gets 50 metres against him. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, that's only my opinion. But,
I think it's shared by many.
I'm obviously wrong. I obviously don't know anything.
It's shared by many. But at the moment, it's a source of frustration for a lot of footy fans, so don't feel isolated in that one. And the Punt Road development, can I ask you on that? The Jack Dyer stand at Punt Road looks like it's if the club get what they want, will be knocked over and redeveloped. There's been a lot of redevelopment at Punt Road in the last couple of years. How do you feel about that being a long-time Richmond man, that will be a different-looking outcome?
Yeah, so I mean, I think we all love in its own way the beauty of the Jack Dyer stand and what it looks like, but from a practical point of view, it's about useless is the issue. No, you know, I mean, that's not enough. In terms of what we're going to do to redevelop, and one of the most important parts of the redevelopment is improving the size of the oval to be MCG size, and the only way you can extend it is back through where the stand is, because you can't go to Punt Road or Brunton Avenue, obviously. And that's the way, and genuinely, from a practical point of view, the stand doesn't really give us much, and we'll rebuild it. We'll call it the Jack Dyer stand, so we're going to do all of the things that respect the history of the Jack Dyer stand. It just won't look the same. But so in some ways it's disappointing, but in other ways it's just what that's what we need to do. Richmond needs to improve what we're doing at Punt Road. We've got girls programs, we've got all sorts of things going on, and we've got no room to put them in, so we need to redevelop it. And to do it, well, we can't keep the stand as it is. So it's a simple reality rather than emotional.
Yep. That's how you have to move forward. We appreciate your time as always, Barmy. Saturday night's going to be a beauty with Richmond Essendon Dreamtime, MCG, 7:30. Check your local guides or get there and support the boys. Always a pleasure. Ride carefully.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Neil Barm with us from the Tigers.
Sharing the views of many, including us in here, on a few of those issues. That jumper clash, that's a real clanger. And, these are the sorts of unforced errors that get people very frustrated. Because there was an Anzac Day only 2 or 3 years ago where both teams wore predominantly black jumpers. Mm. And it was just, it almost felt like, aren't these clubs talking to each other?
Well, this is my point. There has to be a level of communication, particularly for Dreamtime. Like, this is the biggest Indigenous game of the round. Dreamtime's the highlight of the whole thing.
Yep.
They have to collaborate,
surely.
That's
exactly right. Now, but it seems obvious to me. It's a Richmond home game this time, so they will wear predominantly black. So it's incumbent on Essendon for its jumper to be predominantly red. And that can happen.
Or silver, like recent some editions.
Well, they sort of went away from that quite quickly.
They didn't like the silver.
But, I mean, if it wasn't a Dreamtime game, Essendon's jumper would be predominantly red. And that's avoiding a clash. So that's what I don't understand. Because last time it was Collingwood's issue that Collingwood came with a real black number when they were an away team.
It's annoying.
It is annoying because it's such a simple fix. Just talk to each other.
Communication. Common sense. Not so common. 17-8, Taylor Adams is part of that Collingwood team that wore their jumper and you were assaulting him verbally here. I'll bring it up with him after this.
Harford and White, it's RSN
927's
Breakfast Club.
Hey, let's catch up with Taylor Adams. He's our favourite magpie around these parts, part of the Inner Sanctum team for many, many years now, and he's back again with us on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, Tay.
Morning, Harf. Morning, Waddy. How are we?
We are well, mate. We are well. How are you? Because we were under the impression and the information last week that the flu had gone through the magpies, and maybe there's a fair few fellas who had been hit. How are you?
Yeah, I don't think we're the only club to be hit by it. By the sounds of it, it's going around quite a bit at the moment. But yeah, a lot of the guys experienced some sort of flu symptoms, obviously varying in degree of how severe it was. But not feeling good now, mate. So hopefully all that's behind us.
So is it something that players are missing sessions for, like lots of multiple sessions, or just one or two days?
Yeah, we've had quite a few guys miss sessions. I mean, purely because we've had 3 6-day breaks in a row, and that means we're only able to get one session in a week. So, training's been a little bit different, but obviously Ben was missing the weekend through illness. So, it's definitely going around. But I think it's quite a few clubs that have been affected by it, and we're obviously pretty keen not to use that as an excuse. We've had 22 fit players out there, and we've. Yeah, as I said, the symptoms have been really varied. Some guys got away pretty lightly, other guys a little bit more harsh. So, it's been a bit of a curveball, but we've managed to get through it.
There was some really good high energy coming out of the Pies in the early start of this season, the first 6 weeks or so. And a new coach, new regime, all that sort of stuff. Bit of a new coach bounce, which always happens. Is the vibe still the same? It's been a little bit lackluster in the last couple of weeks, a bit indifferent. Friday night was a disappointing night for you and the boys. Is the vibe still the same?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we're still really optimistic. I guess the way we play is high energy, high octane, and we just haven't been able to probably produce that sort of footy for long enough the last 2 weeks. I mean, we did it for bits and pieces against Richmond, and we looked really good, and we probably did it for maybe 10-minute patch in the third quarter against the Doggies, but they were far too good for us on Friday night. So, yeah, the belief's still there. The boys really believe in the way we want to play. We just haven't gone out and executed, and that's probably just signs of a younger group. It has been a big month for us. 3 6-day breaks, come up against a team that I still think will finish top four in the Doggies, and they start like the way they did, and we start the way we did, and it's a long way back from there. So. I've been really proud of the way that we've fought out most matches, but Friday night was really disappointing. We got an opportunity to play on Friday in front of the standalone game in front of a big crowd, and we let ourselves down. So we've had the last couple of days off now, and just to reset and gather some energy, and we'll get back into training and look forward to getting over to Perth this weekend.
What's it like, Taylor, when a virus goes through a club? Like, I know in my son's school at the moment, in his class, there was only 8 that were in school yesterday. So it seems to be going everywhere. But do you kind of have to quarantine from each other to try and stop the spread? Or what do you try and do? Because it clearly was a major issue for your footy club last week.
Yeah, like any organisation, workspace or school, ask you to stay away whilst you're presenting with symptoms, and that's we're no different. Some guys were able to get away, as I said, with mild symptoms and train through it, but some other guys are probably too ill to even come in. So it's just been a really strange period. Given all the stuff that happened with COVID, the last thing you sort of expect is to be hit with something else. But it seems that Melbourne, well, as far as I can tell, Melbourne and the community of Melbourne are being hit with the flu at the moment, and I think the experts did tell us that early on in the year, that be prepared for things to be a little bit worse than flu. So, we've done a reasonable job of getting through it, and there's no extreme science behind it. But if you're unwell, stay away and do your part, and then when you can, get back in and get to work.
So if you miss a session between games, is that noticeable for you going into the game the next week, or is there enough sort of fitness or conditioning you've done over the course of the year that it's not going to have a major impact on you on the weekend?
Yeah, sometimes it's actually a good thing. I missed our main session going into the Richmond game, and actually felt really good playing against the Tigers. Yes, obviously guys react differently, but you don't want to miss too many sessions. And I think that the thing that it can do is upset the cohesiveness of the actual group. Having a lot of guys away, you miss a lot of meetings and a lot of educational sessions. So it isn't ideal for your preparation, but in terms of physical standpoint, I don't think it probably has as large of an impact as what you might think.
Yeah.
If you're just missing one or two sessions.
I want to talk to you about Jack Crisp, because I think we were talking to Neil Barr before about, say, Shai Bolton getting under the radar. I reckon Jack Crisp gets under the radar. He's now become a permanent member of your midfield this year. He's played about 568 games in a row. He never plays a bad game. Can you talk to us about his development since he's got to the footy club, and particularly this year becoming that genuine part of your midfield mix rather than a sort of a running defender?
Yeah, he's been absolutely enormous for us. Crispy, and he's been enormous for us for a long time. I reckon you're right, Whitey. I reckon he does slip under the radar quite a bit externally, but inside the club, we present a game ball for both other players for the best, what we see as the best teammate on game day, and he's won a number of them this year. He's come on in leaps and bounds in terms of his leadership, and the way that he's able to to lead our midfield group now. Obviously, with Pendles going out and still playing more of a wing role, means we've got some younger guys running through there, and obviously Brody Grundy going down as well. So he's really stood up in that aspect. But yeah, just the way he plays, like he's a two-way midfielder, as good a two-way midfielder as I've played with. You know, he pressures really well around the ball. He's hitting the scoreboard at the moment, and he gets back and helps our defence enormously. His running capacities is, you know, there's only a few players in the league who can run with Jack, and yeah, he's certainly been a huge highlight of our season so far. And yeah, I think it's 160 odd games in a row now, so that speaks volumes of the amount of work that he puts in, and that discipline he is away from the footy club, and keeping himself in really good shape.
I think he gets the 10th best streak of games this week. Actually, equals Kevin Bartlett on a streak of games, which is 10th best overall in the history of the game. So he's going beautifully. Another Jack who didn't play last week, Jack Ginnivan, has had a fairly significant year in just about every respect, Tay. We've talked about his sort of presence early in the year and the Anzac Day medal, of course, and all the stuff that came with the social media stuff early in the year. But how's he going with just being such a prominent member of the football community now? Because he's come from nowhere and all of a sudden everyone knows who he is. How's he going?
Yeah, he seems to be handling it pretty well. Yeah, we've had obviously some really good chats with Jack about his well-being and making sure that, you know, all that criticism that he was copying from a particular member of the media community wasn't actually affecting him. And you know, he's a brave kid, but no doubt when you're 19 years old and you've played a handful of games and you cop some feedback like that, it doesn't just affect you know, the player, but it also has an impact on his family and his friends and his network. So, yeah, it's really, really important for us to support him and make sure that he understands that, you know, what's said outside of the footy club doesn't align with the way that we perceive him and view him inside our footy club. So, yeah, he's certainly a work in progress in terms of being able to deal with that. I mean, there's not many 19-year-olds in the country that can, you know, deal with the sort of the pressures that, you know, that come with playing for Collingwood and being a really great contributor for us, let alone with peroxide blonde hair. So, yeah, and he's just a great kid, Jack. I love the way he goes about it, and he's a real footy nut. So he loves his training and being around the boys. So, yeah, we've just got to make sure that he stays that way, and well, not make sure he stays that way, but just help him stay on track with understanding what's important for his role in the team, and so far so good with that.
We've spoken a bit about Jack in that, I mean, firstly, he's a very good player, and I think that's the starting point. But his rise has been meteoric. So when you, just over the last 8 weeks, because I think if he walked down the street last year, no one really would have known who he was. But if you walk down the street now, everyone knows who he is. So, and then when you throw in the Collingwood factor and all that sort of thing, how hard is that to deal with, that sort of meteoric rise and how your life changes so quickly?
Yeah, well, it's very difficult. And it's quite peculiar in a way that, you know, all his schoolmates and those around him, apart from those at the footy club, probably haven't had to deal with it. So,
yeah.
Getting advice on it, quite difficult, but it's like, yeah, as I said, not just him, it's his family, his friends. And it's a different time now. Like you look at, you know, social media and how prominent TikTok and all the social media is. Like even for me, who I think I'm 9 years older than Jack. Like I feel like I'm living in a different world to, well, I was living in a different world at his age, the world that he's living in now. Yeah, these guys are like, they've got serious amounts of followers on these social media networks that I know you can rise to stardom pretty quickly. So, it's different. It's really different. I've found it difficult to get my head around, you know, how much things have changed and, you know, the impact that those social media networks can have on our young guys. So, it's a learning process for all of us. But, yeah, as I said, I think the most important thing for Jack is he understands what he's valued by his teammates, his coaches, and there's no grey area around that. And, you know, he hits the scoreboard and does all these, like, wonderful things that you guys see, but So there's things he does on the field that go unnoticed that we really value, his pressure and his defensive stuff. He's always in the right spot in terms of team structures, and we actually probably missed him in that aspect on Friday night. So
I agree.
Yeah, it's really he's a really important player for us.
He's a talent. That's what we like, talent. He's got some personality. We don't want to take that out of the game. So we want to see him back out there doing his thing sooner rather than later. Will he play this week?
I haven't seen him since last Thursday. So,
right.
I mean, I'm sure he'll be fine. We've had last couple of days off, but I'm sure he'll be good to go.
Well, it's a Sunday night at Perth Stadium, Optus Stadium in Perth. Fremantle taking on the Magpies, hosting the Pies over there. It's going to be a big challenge to get back on track for the boys. Good luck to you, Tay. Always nice to chat, mate. Go well.
Thanks, guys.